You're listening to The Cowboy Pages. Come with me, Christy Crowley, as I travel America in search of cowboy poets and their wisdom. Today's book, Elko, Nevada, Chapter 4, Not Worthy of Poetry, a continuation of my conversation with Paul Zarzisky.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. It is my distinct honor to deliver a short but not too sweet eulogy to and from the rockin' Double Z Bar Whiskey Zarzisky, Unipoet. Worshipped words, spurred Bronx, incited friends, indicted God, scorned jobs, nurtured work, suffered fools, exalted earth, nourished birds, feigned wealth, reveled broke, questioned self, savored food, guzzled ink, stage left. Now let us drink.
Damn, it's about time.
Paul Zarzisky has such a distinctive voice as an artist, and I couldn't let him go without asking how he found that voice and how he came to poetry. His answer was as rich as his poems, and for me, just as moving.
In high school, in this little one-horse town, we were force-fed the masters. We had to explicate, Eliot and Yeats and Robert Frost, whoever, Keats and Shelley, and I was absolutely convinced that all of these dead poets, I'm sure you've seen the film The Dead Poet Society, I was absolutely convinced that my life didn't have the makings for poetry. They were not writing about my life. I'm growing up very viscerally in a one-horse, rough-and-tumble town where, my goals were to make hard hits on the football field, to work real hard. I learned to work very hard as a young man and to get a lot of gratification out of it, to get it on with my girlfriend at the gravel pit on a Friday night with a couple of six packs of Pabst Blue Ribbon. I had fast motorcycles, and the idea was to defy death at all costs and to keep it wild, to live wild, to run on self-destruct and reckless abandon. So it was kind of a rodeo cowboy mentality. I just hadn't discovered rodeo yet, quite yet. But I wasn't hearing any poetry that celebrated those passions or those pursuits. And I think I made a deduction that my life was not worthy of poetry. Mm. And I didn't understand it at the time. I didn't understand how angry it made me. And I got to undergraduate school, and I was introduced to more contemporary poets. One of them, his name was Paul Zimmer. He's still alive. I still send him a birthday card every year. And he wrote poems using his last name in the titles. Zimmer, the luckless fisherman, dreams he is a fish. Zimmer, drunk and alone, dreaming of old football games. I said, wait a minute. Zimmer drunk and alone dreaming of old football games. And I read this thing that they were telling me was a legitimate poem. And at the end, he goes back to the old football field in the middle of the night and he's hammered. And at the end of the poem, he climbs back over the fence and he's a broken field drunkard giving flashy hip fakes to the litter barrels and stiff arming the light posts with his empty bottle tucked up high away from football from fumbles. And I said to myself, that's me. That could be me. You know, I was missing the gridiron in my 20s after I left high school. And then when he wrote Zimmer's head thudding against the blackboard. And you know, it's Paul Zimmer, Paul Zarzisky. That was the other connection. And at the blackboard, I had missed 5 number problems in a row and was about to foul a 6th when the old exasperated nun began to pound my head against my 6 mistakes. When I cried, she threw me back into my seat where I hid my head in shame and swore that very day I'd be a poet and curse her yellow teeth with this. And I thought, my goodness, this is who he's been looking in my window. This was me doing constant battle with the nuns at St. Mary's School. And I didn't know that you could write poetry about your experiences. I didn't know that my stories were worthy of literature.
The Garnet Moon. After forking alfalfa to the horses, you sit with your first cup, first to Suki sun easing through windows in Labahata red adobe. Like liquid tinted pink, this corn silk light runneling over the gentle curved sills. You feather the long fingernail file through beveled arcs and strokes, deliberate as the violinist guides the bow. Your hands cast shadows of dancers to the flagstone floor, shadowed steam from your coffee, a gossamer curtain they make love behind in a spirit breeze. Could this be the Kachina's silhouette, the sacred omen we craved in our lone quests for the dance perfected? I watch your fingers whisking alfalfa leaf from your gold hair, Zia's sun steepening into the room. This afternoon, in blue sage and choya along the Rio Grande, we'll muse over a red anthill, smooth as workings of a jeweled watch. You'll spoon with the nail of your little finger a garnet they've mined and maneuvered to their granular roof, shingled in glitter, a lone moon you'll choose from this universe. As you lift it slowly toward the palm I hold above the hill, spill it, and with your nail tip, roll it across the synapse of all my nerves. A frenzy of ants comes to a standstill in this eclipse of lovers locked perfect for the dance.
Paul and I then began to speak about teaching, and specifically his teaching. It's always remarkable to me how the really great teachers are also really great students.
I went into a juvenile correction facility. I teach at Redlands University almost every year for just a week, you know, and I have a dear friend there who's now the provost, who brings me in and we teach classes together. And one of her colleagues asked if I would be interested. She was doing some kind of an outreach program with a juvenile correctional facility. And we went, and a long, long story made short. It was heartbreaking for me because these young, mostly men, but women too, a few women, and almost all minorities, Hispanics and blacks, you know. And I thought, how, here's this guy walks in with a cowboy hat. Well, I mean, what do we have, and how are we going to, what's going to build this bridge? And I had been recently introduced to Jay-Z. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know much about rap at all, but I read them, you know, I recited a few of my poems, and they seemed mildly interested. And I, for some reason, I said, okay, I said, I know my work isn't as good as Jay-Z's 99 Problems, you know. If you're having girl problems, I feel sorry for your son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me. And I laid that on them, and they went wild. If you're having girl problems, I feel sorry for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me. And they went nuts. How do you know that shit, man? You know, and the one line, just one line, that was the only line I knew, built this bridge across a chasm that I would have guessed I could not cross in six lifetimes. And I said, okay. I said, let's hear what you're thinking. Let's hear what you're writing. And they got into it, and we developed a rapport, and we talked for a couple hours, and we talked the real shit, living and dying on planet Earth. And I was afraid I was going to get in trouble with the guards, but I fell in love with these kids, and I told them, I said, I don't know why you're in here, and I said, I don't give a shit why you're in here. I said, all I know is I look in your eyes, and I see flickers of hope, and I said, please do not let your time in here extinguish those flickers. You got to keep those flickers of hope alive. Mm. And I said, if I could do it, if I could wave a magic, I'd break you all out of here right now. I'd break you out of here and give you a second chance, because I know you're gonna embrace those second chances, you know. And then the last class was the most difficult, because I found out later that several of the inmates, I guess, were in for life or worse because of very serious crimes. But it was a life-altering experience. You were talking about putting me in an environment that would be, you know, very unfamiliar. That was the most unfamiliar environment I've ever been in. But as human beings, as this isn't about, I tell people, they say, well, you're a cowboy poet. And I said, yeah, I'll wear that badge, rodeo poet, whatever, with great honor. But first and foremost, we are all human being poets on planet Earth. Cowboy poets, rap poets, urban poets, rural poets, hobo poets, fisherman poets, you know, it's all got this same foundation underneath. And
and you know, it's a frame, you know, it is a frame through which we can see these parts of our humanity, you know, whether that frame is cowboy or rodeo or fisherman. But I think, you know, what you're talking about, working with these people stuck in these, you know, detention facilities, I mean, that's really, it's really exciting. And it swings back to what you were talking about, you know, the recognition of your voice in someone else's work, or perhaps the permission to say, my life has a story, mm-hmm. and I can tell that story. Mm-hmm. You know, we oftentimes need someone else to point that out to us.
That's the first thing I do. I teach almost every year when I fly in early, the teenagers. I'll have a class full of high school students here. And the first thing I tell them, I said, I don't care if you hear anything else I tell you today, but I want you to believe me when I say your lives are worthy of great art. And I said, it goes beyond that. I said, your lives in and of themselves right now are masterpieces. Your lives in and of themselves right now are great works of art. You don't have to put a word on paper. You don't have to put a paintbrush. I said, here's how we come into the world. I said, we come into the world, and what we are is what we are the blank canvas. We are the blank page. We are the empty dance hall, the empty dance floor. We are the potter's wheel with a big slab of wet clay on it. We are the musical hall, the symphony hall, waiting for the first note. And with each day, with each breath that you take, it's a contribution to a lifetime of brushstrokes, of words, of musical notes, of shaping clay, of dance choreographies, of Philippe Petit putting one foot in front of another on the high wire. Our lives are works of art that each day we bring something to. And I said, I want you to believe, if nothing else, how critical that is to this planet that you are here. This planet would not be as complete without your presence in this time and space. You have to believe me that your lives are that important.
Makes me want to take your class. There it is. Belief. Paul so clearly believes in the magic and poetry of the human experience. I love that he levels the playing field and makes us all artists simply because we're all human. When I see a jockey in position, I want to ride a racehorse. When I see vintage footage of Steve Prefontaine, I want to run as fast as I can. When I see Misty Copeland pirouette, I want to dance the stage of Lincoln Center. And when I hear Paul Zarzisky tell me my life is already a masterpiece, I want to live my life a little more fully. What a notion that your life, my life, our lives are worthy of poetry simply because we are. Simply because we are here now and then never again. His words give me pause. Not because I need time to consider their truth, but more because I need time to absorb their power. These words are both a reckoning and a call to action. Maybe today you and I could both both believe that our life is already a masterpiece, and maybe write a few words of our own to commemorate these works. Just knowing Paul believes in the truth of my life inspires me. He reminds me I don't need to ask permission to create. I just need to listen to the humanity inside of me. I'm thankful to know that someone out there believes in us, and I hope you are too. And of course, I'm thankful to you for listening. You can learn more about our show, Cowboy Poets, and see pictures of my travels at thecowboypages.com.